In today's episode of the Myst History Podcast, we speak with Constanza Pasin. An impressively multifaceted individual, Constanza shares her stories from growing up in West Berlin at the close of the Cold War and experiencing the fall of the Berlin Wall, to serving as managing director of the Mozart House in St. Gilgen, Austria, and portraying the infamous war criminal Maria Mandel in the 2014 film Pesh Maria. We cover a lot of topics during the discussion, with Constanza providing unique perspectives on history, culture, and her personal experiences with them both. Enjoy. It's great to be talking with you once again.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for this opportunity to have me.
I always am unsure where you are and what you're up to. It seems like you're always in a different city between Austria and Germany or somewhere else in Europe. So yeah. Where do you happen to be right now? Is there something that you're working on?
Yeah, so right now I'm in St. Gilgen am Wolfgangsee, near to Salzburg city. And I will be here for a couple of days. Then I'm going to go to Barcelona to have some time off. And then I'm back here again. So so I'm preparing right now for our festival at the Mozart House. We have a festival in summer, where we have different kind of art there and also great food and so everything for the sense, for the senses, for the eyes, the ears, the heart, the soul, and the mouth. We have some bunch of concerts there and summer movie outside in the garden. Yeah, so I'm currently preparing everything that it works well. And yeah. That's what I'm doing right now.
And what would one find? What kinds of food are at a festival in a small town in Austria?
Yeah, so last year we had, it was the fish because of the lake, and we had a bunch of stuff, recording to fishes and goddess and female power and the lake and everything. And this year we're going to have the pig. So there's going to be a bunch of typical Austrian food there, like Spanferkel. I'm not sure if I can translate that for you. Different kinds of also wine, nice wine here from this area in Austria, the best wine to taste. And yeah, this is going to be like the food style we're going to do. And I hope it will work great. We have a really great restaurant here in our village. It's Wirt am Gries, and they cook very well. And I love it. So they mix tradition and also new influences. So I'm very excited about that. And also we have this tiny cocktail bar, wine bar, and they're going to bring great wines. And also kind of tiny food, which will also include like the pork is the right word, not pig, right?
Yeah. Both are technically right, but yep.
So yeah, they're gonna do also some kind of pork, and yeah, so because for us it's a symbol of luck and also wasting stuff, so we want to make a combination also with art, to show also pictures of wasting stuff, upcycling stuff, and also really like pigs in the picture. We try to have this topic and to bring it to the people. I hope it will be good and that everyone can see something in it and take something with it.
It's been a nice start to spring here as well, but I'm sure not quite as beautiful as in the mountains. But maybe some people from Pennsylvania would argue with me on that. I actually gave my mom a Glücksschwein, one of the lucky pigs, for Christmas.
Oh, you did? It.
But I wanted to go back, and I don't know how much you and I, whether in a recording or off of a recording so far, have talked about your childhood and kind of how you got to being at the Mozart House. Looking over your career and from what I knew before preparing for this interview, you work with the Mozart House in St. Gilgen, which is its complete own thing. You've done a lot of acting, and you've done theater and you play multiple instruments. How did you end up developing down that path, starting in Berlin and then moving to Austria? How has it kind of unfolded for you?
Yeah, so I was born in Berlin and my parents played there in an orchestra. So they were musicians, or my mom still is. And of course, that made a huge impression of my life, of course. I grew up with music, with classical music in Berlin, and also started learning different instruments like the violin and the piano. And then in 94, we moved to Austria because my mother was born here in St. Gilgen. So she studied in Salzburg at the Mozarteum and moved to Berlin to the orchestra, met my father. There we came to the world, my two sisters and me. And then we moved here. I mean, I've always been here my whole life in summer, or also Christmas time, because we had this house here, or we still have the house here. And so I always had these connections. I had these two sides of my family. So the Austrian side of the family, then my chosen family in Berlin, and then the side of my family who was from East Germany, from Leipzig. So that they are also musicians. So yeah, that's also the history which I had, or my family has, is of course very... I think it's interesting because there are so many sides in it. And I think that made me the way I am. Feel on the one side, I don't feel home anywhere, like really home, because I have so many homes. And so after I moved here, I've been here in school in St. Gilgen, and I choose to do very much sport. And I decided not to play the violin anymore. Which made my parents sad, of course, but I really wanted to do sports. That was my whole world, and I loved it very much. But then at some point, I think I was 14, I realized that I miss something that has to do with art and my heart. So I started playing the viola again, and moved to a school. So after the sports school, I was going to another school in Salzburg. They also had a tiny orchestra there, so I played there, and that was fun. But then there was this one teacher, and he was a former actor, and he was teaching us German history and also history, and he was talking so great, and I loved to be in his lessons, so because he was just explaining everything so vivid, so alive. And then he at some point had this workshop, acting workshop in school, and actually I was supposed to play in the orchestra, but I couldn't help myself. I wanted to do this workshop, which caused a bit of a trouble, because then they lost their only viola in the orchestra. That was a big of an issue, but in the end I could do the workshop, and this was the first time I had to do something with acting, like so deep. And it touched me, like really everything of me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. It was so great. It felt so good. And it was like I found my voice. So I thought, yeah, okay, I want to do acting. But of course, I think I was 15 or 16 at that time. And then I also love to sing, and I also love to dance. And so I thought, okay, maybe I can combine these things. So I could do musical, for example. And then after graduating school, I moved back to Berlin, and I had some singing lessons to prepare for musical, for the study to musical for the university. But I realized this is not exactly my way of expressing myself or expressing emotions. It was not that deep. And then I thought, okay, maybe it's not musical, maybe it's just theater. In between, I had also classical singing lessons, and I joined having a little internship at the opera in Berlin. because this was always, yeah, it was always bringing me back to my roots with classical music, of course, because it's so in my blood and everything in my system. But also this was not like the right way to express myself. And then I moved to Vienna and I was preparing for acting school. And yeah, and I didn't, it was the first time in my life that I didn't give up on anything, on my dreams. And it was really hard to get into a university or into an acting school. It was really tough to go in there, but I didn't take no for an answer and I just kept going on. And I worked so hard on myself to go there. And yeah, and then I did it and I studied acting. And yeah, so then I had a really long time, I think until Corona in 2019, 2020, I played more than 60 productions and I loved doing it. Although of course, as an actress, it's never a safe job. So you can always end up on the streets, which in my case was not that bad because I have a really great family background. So I would always be, so there would always be a home where I could go back if things wouldn't work out. But I'm glad it did. So I never had to move home. And yes, and then there was the Mozart House in St. Gilgen. So of course, I was always here in holidays and seeing my parents. And they started at the Mozart House and doing this, yeah, try to bring art, music and everything here to the town. And they were helping with the Mozart House. So there was this little board, different people who found themselves and were like, okay, we want to do something here. And so my mother was doing a tiny orchestra with multiple people who were here in the area, who were doing music, not just professionals, but just for fun. And for the concerts, they mixed it also with professional musicians from Salzburg or somewhere else around the world, because my parents, of course, know many, many musicians. And yeah, and so they started it here and I always were on the concerts and enjoying this. And then my brother-in-law, he was supposed to do the management of the Mozart House. And he started here and it was he made it really great, a great job. And at one point, I think it was during Corona, he asked me if I would like to be his assistant because all the theater were closed, the movies, everything was canceled. So I was like, okay, maybe I could do this in between and I can make a combination of being in Vienna and being here and doing also online work. And I had like a few hours to work here per week and it was great. And I was helping with concerts or also weddings. We do have also weddings in the Mozart House because it's also like an event location. And yeah, and then at one point he said, I want to leave the Mozart House. And the board asked me if I could manage it, at least for a few months to check if they could find someone new. And I said, okay, yeah, I could try this because actually I'm just an actress and not having anything to do with management and stuff like this, or also computers, Excel stuff. So I tried it and I was looking for a team around me and I found really great people, like my really best colleague in the world, Alexandra Puchner, who is doing the job with me. And yeah, and then we just said, okay, we're going to do it for a short while. We just look if they find someone else. And then they asked us, because it was going really well, if we would do it like properly, like really. And then I said, yeah, okay. Because I also like the idea of creating a place with my way of bringing art here and different concerts. And also, of course, I want to include more people who have nothing to do with art or music or classical music, to bring them in also, to have like this easy way to connect with art. And that was, I think it worked very well. And the program I was doing, it was a nice opportunity for once to create like a space of my vision of art. Of course, you're always limited, because if I would have like very much money, I could do so much more. But also in this way, I can bring really great artists here and can show the people here around, and also the tourists who are coming, like a really great way of connecting with art. And yes, so I'm doing this right now, but also of course, I'm an actress and I didn't want to quit with that totally. So I have also some tiny projects besides, not theater at the moment, because that requires very much time, which I can't spend, that I'm just 6 weeks away, that wouldn't work. But now we are so strong in this team, I can also leave at some point, also in fall or in winter when there's not so much here, then I can just go and do my projects beside. And this is very great, because so I can still be an actress, because I love it still very much.
I think that's the thing that I like the most about the Mozart House, is that there is this historical, very significant linkage to the past. With just the history of the house itself. And to this day, you are working in the memory of Mozart in a way, or in the spirit of Mozart, at least, to keep providing a place for art to exist.
Yeah.
And I think that the fact that it is a historic building only amplifies the art that is there, or maybe the feeling of the people that are performing there.
Yes, and also the of course the two women, which are so important for me, especially as a woman, of course, and as an artist, the life of the mother of Mozart, Anna Maria, and Maria Anna, so the sister of Mozart, because the mother was born there in the Mozarthaus in St. Gilgen, and the sister of Mozart, Maria Anna, was living there for 17 years. And I think also to give these incredible women a space is very important. And I'm, of course, always attached to artists who are female artists who are bringing their voice, because I feel like this is giving the house some kind of power, female power. I don't know. It's just, And this is very important for me. Sorry.
Could you give a brief kind of overview of the history of the house, just so people are more aware of how it does connect to the Mozart family and how it became what it is today.
So I try my best.
Also, could you also say if there was anything from Mozart's mother or sister, Nannerl's history or their stories that stood out to you that made them interesting as people?
Mm-hmm. So the history, so it was a courthouse, actually, the Mozart House. And so Mozart's grandfather, he was a judge there, and it was in 1720 they remodeled the whole house for him to come there as a judge in St. Gilgen, and there Mozart's mother was born. And after a while, she moved to Salzburg and she got married to Leopold Mozart, the father of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart and Maria Anna Mozart. And later, when the sister of Mozart was in the age of getting married, which was hard for her because she was a really great artist, she was playing really great the piano and also composed stuff, but there is nothing there, which is very sad, because I think it must be amazing what she did. So she had to marry, of course, at that time. And she married a judge again. And so she moved to St. Gilgen and lived there for 17 years. He was a widower. Widower? Oh, God, you have to correct me, Luke. Widow?
You got it right. Widow. I told you, your English is better.
No, it's not. So he was a widower, and she was taking care of his kids and got kids on her own. And she lived there 17 years. And after the death of her husband, she moved back to Salzburg. And then she was working her whole life to take care of everything Mozart did, write and compose. So she was in the Nachlassverwaltung. I have to check that for a moment. Excuse me. Estate administration.
Estate administration. Yep.
Yeah. So she did the estate administration for all the work Mozart did. And this is why we have to be so grateful. We don't know if when she wouldn't have done that, if anything would exist from this genius. So, yeah, this is her work. And it's great that she did it. And always to have in mind that she was an artist herself. Yeah, I think she's a very fascinating woman. And this is also what sticked in my head, her way of seeing the world and playing in all these castles and I don't know where in the world, and then had to get married and moves to a tiny village, which was back then it was just a fisher village. I mean, it was not at now it's really international and it's a great tiny village, but at that time it was just like, yeah, like really the countryside, beautiful lake of course. But I think it must have been hard for her to see the world and being such a great artist and then just not, I don't mean that bad, but the mother and raising children and being there for her husband and not being able to being an artist. But at least she teaches the piano. That is great.
In Austria, there is still a very strong connection to classical music. Being from the United States, I know this isn't the case everywhere, but classical music, as I was growing up, was kind of seen as just something of the past. And the number of people who would listen to it all the time or make it part of their routine isn't as high as in Austria. And it's very clearly still a prominent part of the culture in Austria. And I was wondering if you could speak to that, why classical music continues to be so important to Austrians and how it is regarded within the culture.
Yeah, I think classical music is because it's so deep in our tradition with the waltz and everything. So, and also all the great composers and the music we have here, it's such a deep part of our culture and tradition. So I think that's why it still has this big influence and this big part in our society. I mean, not that big part. I don't know how many people, like in percent, are listening to classical music. I don't know if these are many people, but at least in school and when you're growing up, you get in touch with that. And this is very great because it's keeping alive, so they try to keep it alive. And I think that's the reason why classical music is really deep in our culture. And also, of course, it has always something. So this is why I try to work to bring classical music also to children or young people or people who wouldn't listen to it, because for me, it's so, it can get so deep and it has everything where our music is based on. So it's the ground of everything for me. So every popular song now is based on that, yeah, on that structure of classical music. And I always try to get people in touch with this music, because I think it's, yeah, it has everything your heart needs and your soul. But I totally get when people are like, okay, it's a bit poshy, or this is just for people who are well-educated and stuff. And I don't feel about that in general of art or at theater, of course, because I always wanted to make theater, which is really for everyone. So everyone can get something out of it, like a feeling or emotions or also laughter, just a comedy, just an easy comedy, so that there can be some things for everyone, and also to get them to think, or to get them to think more about it, or when they leave a concert or a theater or an art show or whatever, that they that something is stuck in their mind. That's like the best thing we can do if that happens. But it's also the musicians or the Wiener Philharmoniker, for example, or also the actresses and actors of the big theaters. They are in Austria, they are like stars more than, for example, in Germany. The people who are like really great, great actors that I know or actresses in Germany, if they would walk down the street somewhere in Berlin, like playing in the best theater, no one would recognize them unless they would do also movies or television. Then someone would recognize them, otherwise not. And in Austria, it's different. If you play at the Burgtheater or you play at the Wiener Philharmoniker, so the people are like really, they know you and they admire you. So you have a kind of status. They, they feel like a star. So they are meeting a star. It has a kind of status. You have a kind of status in our society. If you're an artist in Austria, especially in Austria, which is really great. I love it. So
I love it as well. I was shocked. I was in one of the German government buildings at one point in Berlin. And at the time I was there, they had a big exhibit from this well-known artist with these beautiful, massive paintings depicting what people had to go through during World War II. And someone told me that it's because a percentage of that building or that department's budget every year has to go towards art and promoting art within that government area. Mm. And yeah, I think that there is a different connection to art sometimes, or people think about it a little bit differently than in the United States. Not that one way is better or worse, it's just they're unique from each other. And I think that makes it nice and special. And it feels fresh when you experience one or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I'm in Berlin and I like to go to the theater, I really have to check tickets before, like really before. That was also new for me, which is great because so many people are going to the theater. But on the other hand, the whole society doesn't know about this, doesn't know about the actors or the actresses or the directors or stuff. So this is what I like about Berlin. You just go like really easy to the theater. They go in jeans and everything. And in Austria, it's more like, okay, you have to like wear a really nice dress. And it has to be an event. It's more like also a social thing to go to the theater or to a concert or something like that. And in Berlin, it's more like with the normal people. Normal people also go to the theater, but yeah. And I don't know about the money they do get. So I don't know if in Germany there's more money for art or in Austria. I'm not sure, but I suppose there's more money for art in Austria. But I'm not sure.
And that brings me back. I wanted to ask you about, you had mentioned growing up in Berlin before moving back to St. Gilgen, although you would go in the summers. But Berlin in the 80s and early 90s is a very interesting place to be in history.
Mm-hmm. It was.
What do you remember from your childhoods in Berlin? And was there ever any kind of culture shock or surprise going from the big liberal metropolitan city in northern Germany to a beautiful, tiny alpine town?
Yes, of course it was a cultural shock. So when I grew up in Berlin, of course, because my parents were a musician in an orchestra, it was very international. So we had international friends and they were coming from all over, and it was very open. It was didn't matter if you were a girl or a boy. I didn't knew that there could be a difference between being a girl or a boy. So this was great growing up in Berlin. And of course, that was West Berlin at that time. The side of my father's family, they were in East Germany. So this is very something that is, of course, very much in my system, that we had to cross border and to go to see the side of my father's family. It was never easy. And because he was... So in 1960, my father was fleeing from East Germany. And of course, they always knew when he were trying to see his family, it was always difficult. And they always stopped us and they always put everything out of the car, like searching for anything we could have done wrong, or bringing some West German music there, or magazines or whatever. So it was always very complicated to go there. And I know as a kid, I was always a bit scared of crossing the border, and with the people, it was always like this mood. I don't know. I just remember it was not like very casual. And my father was a very strong man. He was a really famous oboist, a really great musician. And he was, he was strong and powerful, and he would always speak his mind. But I remember at that time, he was always trying to bite his tongue not to say anything because, he knew then we couldn't see the family, his family or my grandparents. And I remember when there was in 1989, when the Mauer was falling down, I remember that day so well. And now our neighbor came and said, oh my God, you have to check the news. And I mean, I was 7 at that time and my sister was 9, and we were listening to the radio. And then my mother came home and we said, oh my God. So there's no East, no West Germany anymore. People are free now. They are coming everywhere. And she was so excited. Everyone was so excited. And this was like the biggest thing that where was part of it in history, which was happening. So you could feel like, oh my God, there are, my cousin will come. So the telephone was ringing. It was like going crazy. Everyone was like, oh my God, is this really happening? And so my mother wanted to go to the border and to the Mauer in Berlin. But she was scared to take us with her. And we were so mad because we said, oh my God. And I mean, I was 7. I was like, oh my God, something so big is happening right now. Please let us go with you. We want to be there with you. But she said, no, it's too dangerous because we don't know. And it was a really, it was a kind of a nobody knew situation. And we didn't know if anyone was shooting or something. So so she didn't take us with her. And I was so sad. And I was really mad that she didn't do that. But of course, I get it that she was protective and wanted to make us safe. And yes, and my father was not there in town right at that time. He was playing somewhere with the orchestra. And oh my God, that was an amazing time. And then the next day, my cousin came from East Germany. And yeah, so this was what I experienced in Berlin. And then when we moved here, it was like a totally different kind of living. So here it was like, oh, okay, I'm a girl. That's not as good as being a boy. And you have to go to the church. It's very, and the faith is very important here. And I grew up half, because my father was absolutely not going to church. He was, like I said, from East Germany, and it was like, no, he was living in the Second World War. So he was not into it, but my mother was very deeply, also with her family. So church was a big thing. And so I had this two sides in myself, and I said, okay, good, then I go to church. And everything changed a bit here. And so that the part that I was German, or I am German, was a big issue. There was a bunch of people always like, you're from somewhere else, you're German. And this was hard for me, especially at the beginning. I mean, I'm now really included in this town here, and I love the people here. And it's great, because you go outside and you know so many people, and it has like this community thing, which I love. It's really great. But back then, I know that it was very hard for me going here, and that everything is so different to Berlin, to the life there. So that was not an easy time for me, but I adjusted. And I think I was always like fighting for my rights and for equality. And I was always like catching with boys and stuff, so it was okay. I think I was raised very, very strong. I would say I don't want to have this part in my life, or I would be glad if it wouldn't have been there, but it's also okay because it made me to who I am. And yes.
Having grown up with the wall still up, or at least experiencing much of your childhood in that situation, do you remember the emotions that people were feeling when the wall came down? You mentioned that there was this uncertainty, like, oh, what's really happening? What will happen? Do you know if people before the wall came down were feeling, oh, this, we're probably going to rejoin each other at some point, or there was no hope and it really was this almost spontaneous moment that signified the end of this period of separation?
For me, as a feeling, it was just like the way it was as a child. So for me, it was like, okay, there's East Germany, and there's West Germany. And I know my grandparents or my uncle and his wife and my cousin, so I knew about their situation, or that they didn't have, like, when we sent them chocolate and stuff. Of course, I realized that, and that they had not an easy life there. But I also, when I was there, I also felt like, really, okay, they have a good life. I don't know. It's as a child, I love to be there, and I have a really deep connection to my Eastern family. I feel very connected with them, although they have like this totally different past or totally different history than me, especially my cousin. So he grew up very different than I grew up. So I just felt that there are these two sides of Germany. And also my father and all that. So it was not easy to leave his family. And I always felt that there was something which was not easy to cope with, I think. But back when I see like documentations or documentaries about the wall and stuff and how it got there, of course it was like, okay, it will at some point, Germany will be reunited again. But at that time, I didn't feel that. I was like, okay, this is the situation. And when the wall came down, it was like, for me and for everyone around me, and like I said, I was just 7 years old, but it was like the biggest joy I ever saw and felt. And this is like when you see football, which is very important here, VM or AM or whatever, like the
World Cup or the European Cup.
Yeah, exactly. when you see that, the World Cup or the European Cup, this is when the people are like, so wow, and they are so high in all that, the euphoria in every pore. It's like that, like 100 times, which was happened because it was emotionally way deeper than a cup, than a football cup. So you could feel that everyone was just so, they couldn't believe it. And they were crying and laughing. And it was just, it was amazing. The emotions, the energy in Berlin was like, oh my God, it was unbelievable that this could happen. And then I remember it was, okay, so we can go there and visit my grandparents, my family, like every time. We don't have to get the visa. We don't have, it's just, and they can come visit us. They can be in our lives too. It was, yeah, I'm getting a bit emotional, sorry. But yeah.
No, it's beautiful. I wish I could have seen it. And I'm sorry that your mom didn't let you go because you were 7 at the time.
Yes, but I don't blame her. I don't blame my mom. I totally get it. Because, I mean, there could have been, you know, it could have been.
I probably wouldn't have let you either.
Yeah, I think so too. Because you don't know if there is like this, there are so many people and there was such an energy and you don't know. I mean, Russia could have said, no way, or whatever. You don't know. Or West Germany or whatever. So I do get her. And when I see documentaries about it, I always, yeah. I know that I have been there on another level, but I've been there and I lived it. So yeah.
I read that you also speak Russian and you have spent much time in Russia. You've lived in Russia. I was wondering how you made the decision to start learning Russian. Was it influenced by the East German connection in your family? And then I've also always kind of wondered to what extent, because there was this euphoria as the wall came down and Germans were unified, how much were Germans upset with their own governments for allowing that to happen? And how much of that resentment was directed towards the United States and the Soviet Union for kind of fueling either side of the divide?
Yeah, so first, I didn't choose to learn Russia. It was the school I was sent to. They had Russia as a second language. But I was very excited to learn it because my father was in Russia many times before he went to West Germany. And he was a big fan of Russia and the history and the art and the ballet and the music and everything. So I was happy to learn Russia and I had it in school. And then to learn it better, I went to Russia. It was just 1 month, but I lived 1 month in St. Petersburg. And then I really deeply connected with the language, of course. I was young, so you get to learn languages very fast. I was 17 at that time. And I was with a family there and they included me so great. And it was so warm and welcoming for me. So I was very happy to be there on the one side. And on the other side, of course, I also felt this energy again, some kind of energy where I was also like deeply connected. And also, and I don't know why I'm so deeply connected to it. I was also glad when I came home again to get back to my life at that time. So, but I like I said, I was 17. I was in school. It was during summer where I lived there. And yeah, first love and everything. Maybe that was also part of being happy to be home again. But I remember that I missed my family also. And I never missed, not that I do love my family over the moon, but I never missed my family when I was away. I was also, when I was like 9 or 10 years old, I was in Sweden and everything with friends. So I was never like really homesick or something. But when I was in Russia, I was homesick and I was very happy to come back. And on the other hand, I was so happy to have this opportunity to get to know St. Petersburg and all the culture and the family there. They showed me really everything. It was so great. Also the Hermitage and everything. So it was great. And I also have been on the countryside there, on the Dacha and really, yeah, learned their lives there. So it was great. And to the next part of the question, because of the government, when Germany reunited, I don't know how that was for Russia or America, or because I remember like when I was in school, I was in school in West Berlin, and I remember I was always walking by that American embassy. And the soldiers were like so nice all the time. They learned me how to, you know, when you twinkle with one eye, like this thing. I don't know how to explain wink. It in words.
They taught you how to wink.
Yeah, exactly, but with the eyes. And I was always walking by there and I liked it very much. And also there was this community, they were playing baseball there. And yeah, they were always in my area somehow, these American people, but I didn't think about that, of course. It was like natural for me and I liked it very much. And I don't know what the Russian felt about it after the wall was gone, how they felt, or also the whole system. I think it was, I'm sure it was hard for East Germany. And I think that there were happening many things that were not okay, like with people from West Germany coming there, buying their lands and their houses and making like a big money out of it. And there's so East Germans were like totally different with the values and how they were working. And there was not like this capitalism. There were not like this much money and stuff. And it was, there were also happening very bad things. And I don't know, what it was for the Russian people if they immediately went away from Germany. I'm not sure or how many time that took, because I know from Americans, they are still some families there, right? So yeah, they are still there, or some of them, of course. Yeah, I can't answer that properly, I think. I have to read about it, how that happened at that time. Mm-hmm. But I think it was not easy for Germany also to reunite, and that it was equal for both sides, and that there was taking care of the East German people who had to adjust to this totally new system, the capitalistic system, and their whole system was gone, and everything they were taught and how they lived and how they worked. And I think that now when I look at that, I think there would have been much better preparation for it, and to like really have a system of, okay, how do we reunite again after so many years, after totally two different systems, to get it into one. And I think it was a little bit naive to say, yeah, just put them together again and everything is fine. So yeah. But mm-hmm. I know that, for example, my uncle and my aunt, they were really, really happy about it and so relieved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unfortunate how the reunification took place imperfectly. It seems like it's causing a lot of the issues that are going on today.
Yeah.
And I think that the concept of nostalgie, like this nostalgia for life in East Germany, as much as it might be about people longing for just their life at that time, I think it's also just the fact that they weren't really provided many options for a life after the wall came down as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and also in a political way. So when we say we vote like left wing, do you say that in America too? Left, like the socialist, mm-hmm. do you say that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the West German people, it's a different thing than for East German people, of course. And no, it's still there are, yeah, you can feel it. It's still not equal.
I don't want to take up too much of your time, but the next thing I wanted to ask about was, you portrayed a very dark figure from history, Maria Mandel, in a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last podcast that I did for Missed History, and in kind of just some of the recent posts and things I've been thinking about, I'm trying to better understand the role that art plays in portraying history, what significance art has in telling us what happened in history, what people felt. So I was hoping that you could kind of explain what the role of playing Maria Mandel was, who she was, if you learned anything or felt any different about history after you were tasked with representing this Nazi.
Yeah. Yes, of course. I mean, that was a really hard part. And I thought about it very long, if I should do it, because my whole system is so against it. I was raised so, I mean, the whole life, and also you learn about this part of history, and we are, I just can talk for myself, but I'm like really influenced about that. And I'm really that was a big, big part in our education, and that this will never happen again. And then you get to play this part. And of course, as an actress, I know that I have to play any part, and I can play in any part some humanity. I can find something in there where I can connect. So whether it's a, just bad woman, I don't know, but she has maybe, or I don't know, maybe it comes from this side, why she is like that. You can always explain it. But with this part, with Maria Mandel, it was really hard for me, because I thought, okay, there is nothing that I can, like really nothing where I can feel this connection, but I have to play her like really I have to work on this, that it is really natural. And so I have to, yeah, think about that woman, which I really didn't want to think about that woman, but it's my job. And so it was not easy. And so I tried just to focus, not to think about all the cruel things she did. Now, cruel is not the right word. It's way too nice for her. So all the things she did, try not to think about it when I'm playing her.
Maybe there's a better word in German.
Grausam, cruel. Yeah, grausam. It's cruel. It's cruel, but it's like more than cruel. It's like, I can't find the right word for her. I think even in German, I wouldn't find the right word for her. So I tried to play her with, okay, this is not in her mind right now because she's not thinking about all the things she's doing with the people. She's just justifying herself all the time. It's just, I'm doing the right thing. So I know this has to be like this, like a psychotic tick or something. I don't know. So I just tried to play her the best way I could play her without getting nightmares. But I got my nightmares, of course, because when you are getting deep in the material, so when you're getting deep into history and into war and all these things that were happening, especially in World War II, especially then, you get nightmares, of course. But I think it is very important to have these figures, and it's very important to have all these historic figures to show them, because we have always to keep it in mind. And that was why I took the role, because I thought, okay, I will give this woman a face and a voice, my voice and my face, that people, so that it stays alive, that we please never forget, that this can never happen again. So this is why I choose to do it. And I said, okay, if I can just convince one one human being, then it's okay, then it's good, then it's not for nothing. I played so many roles in my life, in theater and movie, but this was like the hardest for me.
I think that's one of the things that really makes Germany and Austria in different ways unique from other countries in the world. I've had a lot of friends ask me if in Germany people learn about World War II and the Holocaust. And I'm like, yeah, they learn about it much more than we do, probably.
Yes, like and at least
also,
three or four times. Yeah,
and it's everywhere. I mean, you see, there's Stolpersteine, these little stones, just everywhere throughout Berlin, commemorating families, individuals that were killed during the Holocaust. I was wondering, since you spent time growing up in both countries, if you could talk about how you learned about World War II in Germany and Austria, how the countries might think about it slightly differently or not, if you think it has an effect on the people of the country, that they're learning in school, my country did these things. How do you balance being proud of your history and your heritage and your culture with recognition that these horrible things also happened?
Yeah, so I think it's for every, it's always hard to say I'm German when you go somewhere else in the world. It's always like with a mix of, I'm sorry that I'm German. And I think in Germany, you learn about it. So I learned from the first time I heard about it was, of course, from my father, because he was born in World War II. And he told me very much about it. My grandfather told me very much about it. And then, of course, in school, we learned very much about it. And I think Germany is, because they are so much working with this, or so much in education, because it's so important for Germany to have this, so this never happens again, to remember, to have it in the history, to remember all the time, which is more, and also it's like in Germany, they are more like, okay, we did this and we have to have that always in mind and not to excuse ourselves.
And I think, and I hope I'm not getting deported from Austria when I say this, but in Austria, it's more like, yeah, the Germans came to us and they, you know, so sometimes they, I think sometimes it's a bit this, okay, we did that as well. Sometimes I miss that a bit in Austria. I think in Germany, it's more like, okay, we did this, a horror scenario that we did it. And we, but we stand, yeah, we know that. And we try to work and make recommendations, Wiedergutmachung.
Reparations is, I guess, the most direct translation, but it's to make good again. It's like it brings things back to goodness. It makes
yeah, but it's not the
it makes up for what happened.
Yeah, it's not the right word, but to make it a good again, so that we are always yeah, we never forget this. And I think yeah, Germany is more. Has to do, of course, because it started there. That's obvious, of course. But also Austria was welcoming Adolf Hitler on the borders. So they are also part of it. And sometimes I feel it's just pushing it a bit more away than the Germans do. But I had a really great, great teacher here in Austrian school. And she was, although we were young, I remember I was maybe 12 or 13. She showed us like the really craziest movies. I mean, like really, it were great movies, but really hard for us at that time. We were very young, but she was like, no, you have to cope with it. This was what happened and you have to see it and you have to see the photographs and you have to, she was very, yeah, demanding and in, you have to look at this. This is our history. This is what we did. And that was great. So I think I learned about World War II and the Holocaust, I think about at least 5 times in school. So in Germany, at least 2 times and then 3 times in Austria. So in multiple schools, of course. So we had, yeah, this is very much in our curriculum. This is an important part of it. And it's, yeah, it should be, of course. It's good that it is like this. And I think you can't do enough, because when you see now the political situation in Germany and in Austria, it's to be right again and going back there a bit. So it's even more important to always remember and to always have that, and also to work with children so that they realize, oh, it starts here. It starts, oh, this is a point where it starts already when I exclude someone. Why do I do that? Why? Because of this, because of this, because of this. And I think it's very important to work and also always, always have it present. Also when you're grown up.
That's all, folks. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Please drop a like and subscribe if you did, so that I can have more guests on like this in the future to discuss all kinds of history-related topics, from photography and the ancient ruins of West Africa to the odd habits of Austria's Habsburg dynasty. More information about the guest and their work can be found in the description. I'm Luke. See you next time.